Answer? Why can't David build the Beis HaMikdash? He had blood on his hands. You had blood like, you know, like a kohen who accidentally even killed somebody, but you can't dochen. Also, David Melech had blood on his hands, therefore, he can't deal with the Beis HaMikdash. Right? A very personal thing. Okay. When you study the topic more in detail, like we do in yeshiva nowadays, you see it's much more complicated. It's talking about David. It's a question of generation, stability, how Am Yisrael as a nation relates to other nations. In other words, we need to more mature as a nation. We have to wait for your son to have a more stable kingdom and have a strong economy and have better relations with other nations and have a generation of peace, and then we can make God's name great with a mikdash. But again, because of the situation today, all of a sudden, once we become a nation, all of a sudden we turn to the Bible in search of meaning of what it means to be a nation. And tons of study of Tanakh Bichlal, besides Chumash, for sure the Navi side, right, was quite dormant for hundreds of years for a very simple reason. When you're living in Europe, in a Christian society, persecuted, in ghettos all the time, right, with the long dream of... what do stories about Kibush Aretz mean on a day-to-day life of Sefer Yeshua? Right? What's it mean about having a melech? Right? Good to have a king, bad to have a king. Those stories laid on the back burner. People were looking for more what? What's it mean to me in my day-to-day life on a personal level? Which is fine. Okay? All of a sudden we have a state, and after 2,000 years, we have topics. What type of army to set up? Is it mutter to have an army? Is it mutter to have a king? Is it good or not good to have a king? Or some type of central government? Right? What type of economic system does Chumash want, etc.? Right? Questions to deal with the nation. All of a sudden, we have to turn to Chumash again and revive its study. Divine, is there an answer? Again, not expecting an answer of do A, B, C, D, but at least to give a direction. Because there's laws of Chumash that only deal with the individual. There's stories of Chumash which deal with the nation. And therefore, you can have tons of, and I'll even agree that there's misinterpretation. Right? Do we learn from Sefer Yeshua you have to kill every goy? You're supposed to come into Israel and just kill all the Arabs and that's it? Is that the message of Sefer Yeshua? A lot of people say that because they read it, what's called Shitri. Shitri is... Superficially. You look more carefully, the message is much more complicated. Okay. What do you do with those situations? Those are always things that need... Right? And therefore, there's a whole new trend in Israel, especially. People are turning to the Bible again to find meaning. Okay. Now, one other thing that happens, I'll give you an example. One of the popular trends say also, family relationships in the Bible, women in Tanakh, and things like that. Now, that's legitimate. But all of a sudden, women in Judaism becomes a big topic, which is a modern trend, which is... No, what do people tend to do? Hey, what's the Bible have to say about that? Now, family relationships, right? Now, what happens, and here I sort of take issue sometimes, but when you have a book which is coming to explain God's relationship with the nation, or how he chose Am Yisrael, etc., and in the story of how he chose Am Yisrael are sort of patterns, or stories of patterns about, like Ramban says, of myself at Simla Banim, patterns of Jewish history, in order to give over that message, Chumash has stories about Yaakov and Esav and Rivka and Yitzchak, right, Rivka and Yos and Yaakov and Yaakov and Esav. You know what I'm talking about, okay? Yeah, we have family stories, Avram and Sarah, etc., right? What is the purpose of those stories? Are those stories written for what purpose? To tell you the nature of Jewish history, the nature of picking a nation, etc., right? Or are they coming to tell you about family relationships? That's a big question. Now, there's a tendency to do what? Like, there's one less approach, which with some to an extreme is, the answer to the Bible is everything, right? Meaning what? I could figure out if it's going to rain in 3 weeks from now if I know how to read the psukim right. Right? And I can figure out that Rabin would have been assassinated if I only knew how to read the psukim. No, we would have been like they almost look at the Chumash is sometimes studied as some kind of magic book, right? Full of mysticism, and I can find every. You only have to know how to decode it. Almost turns into almost an avodah zarah sometimes. Right? The question is that. Again, but that's an assumption. That's an assumption about what kind of book do we have here. Do I have this magic book that's got, if I put the words together the right way, I can find out everything? Or do I have a book which is giving over a message, a more general message, Tami saw about its nature, its purpose, etc.? And that's the reason for the stories. Now, is Chumash giving us a message about family relationships, right? That's a good question. Can I take the story of the Avot and learn from there about family relationships? Now, what I can do for sure is I can use them as a springboard to discuss family relationships. And here we get to what I call midrash, which happens quite often, what we like to call in yeshiva, shalashudas, which are totally legitimate. Okay. If Torah is the center of our life, and you want to talk about something, what became the minhag in Chazal? Right? Since Chumash is so central to our life, what do you do? You want to talk about something, what do you always begin with? Start with a pasuk. Start with a story. As a springboard. Now, if you take a pasuk, or a story in Chumash, and use that as a springboard to discuss family relations, to discuss any topic you want, right? That's beautiful and wonderful, right? Patach, you know, Ploni Ivama. And that should be then. That's wonderful. Does that mean that midrash is what? Is pshat of the psukim? For sure not. But that's exactly midrash. That's what in many ways what it means. Sometimes, in order to say something, what's protocol in a Jewish family, in a Jewish home? What's protocol? You have something to say. You have a philosophical idea to give over. You have a topic, even halachic give over. You don't just say what it is. What do you do? You open with a pasuk. Right? You want to give over shiurim? What pasuk to use? Eretz chita v'sora v'gefen v'ten avrimon. Every word there is what? Tells you a different shiur. In halacha. Right? You want to give over a nice idea, machshava, about kibbutz harim? There's Yosef, what do you call it? Yitzchak brought tzvachim to Rehi Aviv, I mean Yaakov brought tzvachim to Rehi Aviv Yitzchak. So what pasuk do we use? We take that pasuk and say, from here we learn about the person's chayv in the covenant of his father more than his grandfather. Is that pshat in the pasuk? For sure not simple pshat, like all the parshim disagree there with Rashi. But what are we doing? We take a pasuk, and what do? We use it as a springboard to tell something which is totally legitimate. I could say without the pasuk. I give over an idea without a pasuk. When I use the pasuk, I'm using it as a springboard to give over an idea, and that's beautiful, that's wonderful. And that's a Jewish way of life. But that shouldn't be mistaken with, coming to explain pshat. I'm trying to simply give over the difference between pshat and drush, sometimes, which is sometimes confusing. Sometimes we interpret, trying to understand what was out, what, why is this story in Chumash? What do we learn from it? God's original intent. Sometimes we use it in the second layer. Let's use Chumash as a springboard to give over my ideas or my understanding. Okay? Which could be said even without the Pasuk Chumash. The Pasuk Chumash only gives you a bit of a backing. Okay. Now, is it legitimate to go and take Pesukim and Chumash from that, write books in psychology and family relationships and how you're supposed to treat your wife, how you aren't supposed to treat your wife from here and there? Again, just like from Shutim, you know what response are? Shutim? Yeah. Okay. You can learn history from Shutim, correct? But that's not a history book, right? A response is a response. From details of the response, I can learn history. But it's not a history book, right? From Chumash, right? Which is telling Akash Baruch, telling Amisa what he expects from them, okay? That includes stories. So I could, from those stories, learn something about family relationships. But is that the purpose of why it's written? I think different. It can be a byproduct, it can be a secondary thing. But that's why you always have to be careful of, are you coming to explain when you interpret Chumash, are you coming to explain are you trying to find what Hashem's intent is? Basically using Chumash to give over an idea which might be legitimate, but are you coming to say that's exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted or not? That's something which always pays to think. I want to conclude with a 2 second shir, which I guess we'll do it in Or Chaim on Shabbos. About Sefer Shoftim, which relates to Israel today. Again, what would a prophet say today? What to do? Okay. There are many situations in Jewish history where we're in a rough situation. There's no easy solution, no easy answer. You are familiar with Sefer Shoftim? Okay. Sefer Shoftim, written by Shmuel Navi. What was Shmuel's intent? Author's intent. When he wrote Sefer Shoftim, what message did he want to give over? Remember, Shmuel, it's a composition, Sefer Shoftim, written by Shmuel Navi. Right? And it's being written when? During the time of Shmuel, what's happening? Remember the people want a king? But the time of Shmuel is after hundreds of years of political disasters. Right? After the time of Yeshua, the nation never got on its 2 feet. Right? Trouble every 20, 30 years, another war and another enemy and another war, and finally this guy comes and saves the day, and this guy comes and saves the day, and then another trouble. Remember the cycle of Sefer Shoftim? Okay. What does Shmuel do? Shmuel for that writes a beautiful book. It's the example of Nevoah, which I'm trying to explain. Shmuel writes a book for a purpose. He has a message to give over. But it's not a simple message. How can you understand the message of Sefer Shoftim? What Shmuel say? Don't think that having a king will solve all your problems. What's the real answer to your problem? Follow God, right? How come you have trouble in the time of the Shoftim? You didn't follow God. And he brings tons of proofs. You follow God, he brings the Moshiach, you do tshuva, you don't do tshuva, you leave God, he punishes you. That's true up to Gidon. Then we have a whole set of stories. They ask for a king. Remember with Gidon? And Gidon says no. And what happens afterwards? We get stuck with Abimelech. We get stuck with Yiftach. We get stuck with Shimshon. Right? not as good as earlier Shoftim. There's also a message there. That when there's an opportunity for a king, don't say no so far. Look, when you say no to a king, don't think things are getting better. What's the last part of the book about? Remember all those strange stories about Pelegesh B'Giva and Pesach Micha? If you know, fine, we can't do the whole shir now. But there's stories about this Ish Levi wandering around causing trouble. But the educational level there is a disaster. People doing, you know, crazy things. This one swearing, and this one... The stories there are, like, ridiculous. Not the stories are true story, but they're what Bnei Yisrael are doing from the educational level is disastrous. And we're all blaming that on Shei Levi. And what's the bottom line? In Melech B'Yisrael. There's no king, Ishesha ben Aviyasa. So what's Shmuel doing? He's giving a complex message. What's he saying? Don't think that if you have a king, that'll solve all your problems. But don't think if you just do tshuva and you don't put a king, things will get better either. What do you need? You need there's a short-term approach, there's a long-term approach. It's a complex approach and a multifaceted approach. Right? Don't think that there's one problem, one solution for all your problems. Right? On a national level, what do you have to do? On the one hand, don't think that a king alone changing your political system will solve your problems. But don't think that not doing political reform, things will get any better. And don't think that without Sheva Devi doing their job, the people will be educated properly. You need political reform. What Shmuel's saying? We need to political reform. We need to religious reform. We need to educational reform. Again, in a nutshell, let's say for Shoftim. He gives a message, again, in a beautiful way through different stories. When you study the whole book, again, that's a shir to do. Now, what happens in Israel today? How do we study Sefer Shoftim? We study Sefer Shoftim looking for a message to a nation. Right? 100 years ago, how would you study Shoftim? What's the message to the individual? Because we have a state today, and we have similar problems like they had in the time of the Shoftim. And we had Shoftim, and we're stuck with Shoftim not much better than Avimelech and Lo Aleinu, right? We're stuck with Shoftim. How do you deal with that? And we have an education system which needs a lot of revamping. Right? We have a problem with Shevet Levi not doing its job properly. And we have a problem with Avodah Zarah, etc., of people not following Hashem. Right? How do you reform? Reform not in the modern times, right? How do you properly reform situations? Right? Not expecting one simple solution, but a short-term solution, a long-term solution, long-term planning. That's something you can learn from Sefer Shmuel. So in modern, I want to continue with the hope, I guess, that we can, our modern-day study of Chumash, of Navi, etc., now we should be just something for learning, but if we study it, understanding that there's author's intent, that there's a message here for Am Yisrael, not only as individuals, but as a nation, what God expects from them, and what plan there is, what master plan there is for them, and what expectations are, and how in the past people dealt with situations, studied them, and made something, and fixed things, and made improvement, right? Then hopefully we can continue to study, not simply to find, you know, documents here and there and thing, or this cute little story, but there's a source of study, again, together with Chazal, with Chachamim, but to appreciate that there's and not only there's hope, there's also direction of a better and stronger future for Am Yisrael. Okay. Thank you.
We will take questions. I don't know if anybody has questions. I'm sure people have, but if you are brave enough to come and ask your questions, ask you to come forward to the microphone. Keep it short and don't make a statement. Just ask a question. Just before we get to that, so you can think about the question in your mind, just a couple of announcements. First of all, tapes are available of the lecture. You can sign up. As I mentioned, I didn't go into details. You all know this is the kickoff of, we hope, will be a very important and project of learning in the city, opening up a Beit Midrash for women, independent learning, guided learning, shiurim, chavrutot, and it's open for everybody. There are pamphlets, which I'm sure you've all seen. It's self-explanatory. We don't, not everything is etched in stone. The exact details, we will let you know. Hopefully, we'll put ads, whatever, to let you know. But the most important thing is learning Torah, is to have a Beit Midrash where this is a women's Beit Midrash. We'll start, we can only worry about one thing at a time. And I invite everybody, all the women to come and learn. We'll be open every morning to learn, and if you want help in getting a chavrusa or to study independently, there'll be people in the Beit Midrash who can help you along. It's a place to have a makom Torah. And we are privileged to have Rabbi Liebtag here to guide us. Those who are here in the morning really, really enjoyed it. It was a wonderful shiur. Not, tonight more of a lecture, as you said, those who are interested, tomorrow morning, 9:15, we'll be having a shiur and the whole style on the Yud Gimel Mita, from the Aseret HaDibra to the Yud Gimel Mita. That's a court up tonight. That's enough of my announcements. Now, if anybody has any questions, Rabbi Liebtau will take them. We'll have Mariv and refreshments in the Beit Midrash. So, by now, like, somebody should have thought of a question. No, otherwise, okay. Yes. Just come to the microphone in terms of our tape recorder, you know. Everything, the technology has to rule the world.
You mentioned that the Ramban says that many things in of the Oves are Maisa Oves Dumi Labonim. Is he suggesting that some of those, I'm reminded of him suggesting that then these stories might be sagas, the way Gabriel Remarque says of 100 Years of Solitude, that it's a saga just alluding to history, which actually didn't happen. Is he suggesting that these are not historical events?
That question always comes up. Okay. I'll start. When we say Maaseh Avotim Labanim, by the way, there's two different understandings. The young understanding is that what the Avot did is teaching us how to act. We're supposed to learn from the Avot, you know, how to act. They were tzaddikim, we have to be tzaddikim like them. And that's not what Ramban's talking about. And that's also hard to find in Chumash. Most of the stories, like the stories of, the stories which are quite difficult, okay? Unless you reinterpret them. But the that's not Ramban, Maaseh Avotim Labanim, understands that the stories, in addition to what they were, but they're patterns in Jewish history. Now, what can you say? If it's just a pattern, that's all it is. So simply the stories are, quote unquote, some people come to the conclusion, they're sort of just made up to explain the patterns. Now, he never says that one way or the other way on there. But what leads Ramban to that is the whole tefisa of Kabbalah. He was a big Kabbalist, the Ramban. And in essence, what's Kabbalah come and do?
But he denied the validity of the Midrash.
Of which Midrash?
Of Ramban.
He doesn't deny it.
It's
That doesn't deny the right of Medrash, right? That puts a framework in how to understand Medrash.
Doesn't he suggest that it's not of a valid source?
What do you mean by valid? If a Medrash means this is what God intended, then that's not a Medrash.
No, but he says it's of human origin.
That's exactly what a Medrash is. Your question is exactly my point I'm trying to get over about assumption when you read something. Just like you have assumption when you read Chumash, what's your assumption when you see a Medrash? Is that Medrash coming to explain what God wanted in that pasuk? What's that? Most midrashim aren't that. That's halacha moshe misinai. What's a medrash? A medrash is, I respect the fact that this came from God, and therefore when I have an idea to give over, I'm going to use this pasuk as a springboard to give over an idea. That's legitimate. As long as you understand that's an idea coming with someone trying to give guidance in the spirit of the Bible to understanding life and understanding your existence, understand what you want to do. That's legitimate. Okay? What's Ramban saying? Don't think any medrash you read, written by anybody, is interpreting what Hashem wanted when he wrote that pasuk in Chumash. But that doesn't delegitimize Midrash. It simply puts it into the framework to better understand it. It was called Midrash appreciation. But that's an important point because that's a mistake. That's the misunderstanding that happens a lot. Now, as far as whether it happened or not, I think that's irrelevant as far as, in other words, put it this way, if no matter what happened, the most important thing in Chumash is how it's told over. Why is it told over? We don't have the entire story of the Avot. We have certain select stories. And therefore, those stories, the manner in which they're told is to give us an understanding of life. And again, there's multiple levels of understanding Chumash, and it's like almost like a hologram. It's not that the only pshat is right and not drash, or not remez and sod. But Ramban sees in Chumash a pattern to understand how Kodesh Baruch Hu works, what's Kabbalah? Kabbalah is like, means a parallel between what happens above, what's below. But you begin to understand that God works in certain ways. Right? And you want to understand Kodesh Baruch Hu, appreciate what he does. You understand the patterns which he works. You want to understand Jewish history. So the stories of Chumash help you understand that. So we all believe that the Avot existed, and they were there, they were whole life, and God spoke to them, etc. Now, are the stories of Chumash coming simply to give us their history? Are the stories of Chumash being written and presented in a much deeper manner in order to understand patterns in Jewish history and to appreciate the events throughout our history? That doesn't mean whether the story happened or didn't happen. That's simply taking what part of the story is told and how it's told to learn for the future. Okay. Any last one? Okay. It's late already, yeah, so it's fine. Okay, okay, okay.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll daven Marv in a few moments. The woman can behind the mechitza. I apologize, at Mincha we didn't have a mechitza, so I'll do tshuva now. We can all stay and daven Marv. And after Marv, there are refreshments in the Beit Midrash. Have a good evening.